Welcome to Pod Summarizer, the way to summarize your favorite podcasts. Today, we have a summary of Tucker Carlson. In this episode, the host delves into the unprecedented coalition that propelled Donald J. Trump to victory, challenging the traditional left-right political divide. The discussion highlights the implications of ongoing conflicts, particularly in the Middle East, on this coalition and broader American politics. What are the stakes for the future of the country? Remember to follow us on X and Instagram and on our website, podsummarizer.xyz. And now, let's begin.
Donald J. Trump gets elected in November on the back of this amazing coalition, unprecedented coalition, different parts of American society. You never thought of anything in common. Trump paints a picture that makes it really obvious that the old structure, left versus right, Democrat versus Republican, is basically BS and a control device, I think. This is my interpretation anyway. So he creates this brand new coalition. New York Times writes almost nothing about it because it's such a massive threat. But this coalition, which you described earlier and more precisely than anybody by far, is the defining fact of American politics. And it kind of feels like it's being blown up over this war in Iran. That's my observation. Correct me.
Well, I think if you look at the three planks, stop the forever wars, seal the border, and deport the illegal alien invaders, and redo the commercial relationships in the world around trade deals and bring high value added manufacturing jobs back here, they're trying to shut all three down,
yeah.
Right? But the one that they're obsessed with the most, which I find strange, is the forever wars. They've got to be in the forever wars, and particularly in the Middle East. I mean, this is what, and I'm a big supporter of Israel.
Yes.
And I'm telling people, hey, if we get sucked into this war, which inexorably looks like it's going to happen on the combat side, it's going to not just blow up the coalition, it's also going to thwart what we're doing with the most important thing, which is the deportation of the illegal alien invaders that are here. If we don't do that, we don't have a country. And you just see right now, they're doubling, tripling out. This is actually potentially a real civil war in our biggest cities. And President Trump has to have our backing. And so, and this came out of nowhere. I mean, the trade deals you saw, he put together Liberation Day, but they've been thinking about it a long time. I mean, Trump's been talking about this since Lou Dobbs back in the 90s. He lays that out there. It's very sophisticated. He's got Scott Bessent running around with Lutnick. They're trying to make these deals. He sealed the border already in the first 60 days. Now we're really going down and actually having the deportation, see the fight. And then out of nowhere comes a war with Persia. It's like a shooting war with Persia, a massive shooting war with Persia. And it's like, how did this happen? And that's why I've been up as a defender of Israel and someone that's very pro-Israel. I've been saying, hey, this is going to be the end of Israel because of the way these decisions have been made. And you have, I think, shockingly today, early when we had you on the show, you bring up a point that we have to address, which I think it's the thing itself. What is it about this apparatus? When you have a coalition that's like 1932 that's coming together, like Roosevelt had Harvard professors and crackers and Democrats and ranchers out west and big city bosses and the Irish and the Italians, and you put it all together and they juggled it. And they
got Brooklyn, Butte, Montana, Birmingham, Alabama, and they're all on the same side. Like, how does that happen?
And they govern literally almost all the way to Trump. You know, Reagan took out part of it. Newt Gingrich took out part of it. But it was 50, 60, 70 years. We have the same ability. We have hardscrabble Hispanics on the Rio Grande Valley,
yes,
in South Texas. We have tech bros. We have, economic nationalists. We have economic populists. We have people that want to stop their forever wars. There's three planks. And right at the beginning of it, you know, and it's on the 10th anniversary of coming down the Golden Escalator. That was 10 years ago Sunday. And I tell people, as many triumphs and tragedies, victories and defeats, good days and horrible days, when we're winning and sometimes we're losing, those 10 years of everything that's gone on is just the preamble for where we are today on the convergence of these crises. And now, all of a sudden, a shooting war where they're taking the Nimitz battle group out of the South China Sea and sending three carrier battle groups now to the North Arabian Sea, Red Sea, plus Arleigh Burke destroyers and a whole fleet in the Eastern Mediterranean. We're prepping for a major shooting war. And how did it happen? I think what's most shocking is what you said. Hey, it was like Iraq. You're inexorably just drawn in decisions kind of just happened. It's like, what's happened over the last 72 hours? How do we even get to this point? How did this actually happen? Who made these decisions when we had the intel out there that this was not like a thing? This was something that was going to happen a year or two from now.
Yes.
Beebe admitted to Brett Baer on Sunday night. And so the question before us is not simply the Israel-Persia situation, is what the fuck is going on in this city that just drives this city, whether you're Barack Obama or Donald Trump. And if we don't sort it out now, and I mean right now, that's what we have to have a throwdown. We have to name names. We have to expose it. If we don't throw it out now, throw down now in the summer of 2025, we're not going to have a country. You know, forget the midterms. Forget the next election still. We have to have this. What the CIA is, what happened in Ukraine, what the CIA has done, what DNI is doing, what the Justice Department, what the FBI, what DIA and the Pentagon. Because right now we only have a tenuous grip on those. We have two people at the FBI, Cash and Bongino. We got a handful of people over at the Justice Department in a massive 30-some person, or 15,000, 20,000 person operation. We have three or four people at DNI with 17 agencies. We're putting a couple of people in there. At the Pentagon, we got Pete and a handful of guys. And every time a guy steps up or the team steps up to say they want to stop the forever wars, they're turfed out. He's lost 10 people since we've even got there. And every time Bridge Colby tries to do something, you know, Bridge Colby's on the front page of that he's an appeaser. So my point is that now we're getting down to it. With all these converging crises, we have an apparatus that reports to Wall Street, to foreign investors, to Silicon Valley, in business with the Chinese Communist Party, that's running the deal. And now's the time if we don't lance the bull over this country, you're not going to, if you can't turn around with Trump, the Trump team he has, people like you, myself, and they're blessed to have these apparatuses. If we can't do this now, it's not going to get done. And so that's why, to me, it's gone of everything we're doing. Stopping the forever wars, redoing the commercial relationships with China to bring jobs back, and sealing the border and sending home deporting 10 million, which is going to be massive, almost like a civil war in these big cities. Of all of those, and I've always said the deportation is the most, to get our sovereignty back, the war we have to have now, the throwdown we have to have now is with the deep state. And we can't, I think we've looked away too often. We just kind of kicking the can down the road. And if we can't do it now with Trump, it's not going to get done.
It does feel like Fox News is playing, and I never criticize Fox because they were so kind to me, but they are playing a central role in the propaganda operation here, it feels like.
Let's go back to the Iraq War. I mean, you were there, you saw it. Look at the Iraq War.
I promoted the Iraq War.
Of the information you were giving. Yeah. Knowingly what they did, if you go back to look at Iraq, it's not like these things are successful. They're not successful. They're unsuccessful. They can't be successful because, as Lincoln told us, what you need is popular opinion to have your back. And we don't do enough about educating the American people on what reality is. In fact, they give them the exact opposite. This is the rise of Trump is from two things. The rise of Trump is from the failed Iraq war and from the 2008 financial collapse.
Exactly.
You had Buchanan before that. We had Perot before that. We had even Reagan for some populism national.
With the echoes of past conflicts resonating, the discussion shifts to the grim realities of war's consequences, revealing how history often repeats itself in the face of dissent and political opposition.
To a shooting war of which it'll be 10 years and the casualties will dwarf anything you saw in World War II.
One of the lessons that we never talk about from World War II, since you evoked the comparison, is that the second the shooting war started in Great Britain and the United States, opponents of the war went to jail. And Winston Churchill's entire political opposition went to jail with their wives for the duration of the war. And some of them died. That's been completely, that's just a fact. And you can call those people whatever you want, and they may have been terrible people, whatever, but they were his political opponents and he put them in jail. And Roosevelt did, you know, sick the federal government on opponents of the war, flat out. So if
Lincoln did the same
thing. That's exactly right. I love Lincoln.
And in areas that we control in the Revolutionary War, which is not a lot, the same thing happened. That's called war.
Exactly.
This is what happened.
Exactly. And opponents of war are invariably described as allies of the enemy, and they're persecuted. Do you worry about that happening to you? You just said on camera, I don't want this war, but we're moving toward a third world war.
Well, I saw a look.
Are you worried about going back to jail?
I went to prison on a misdemeanor, but it was kind of one of the same things. I wouldn't testify. I wouldn't turn because I said this committee is not legitimate. Doesn't have a ranking member. Doesn't have a minority counsel. Is totally legitimate. Plus, he's got executive privilege. That's good enough for me. And if I have to fight this, and I think it's going to go to the Supreme Court, although I've served my prison sentence, I'm taking it up to the Supreme Court because I had a pretty good ruling, not terrible, from the appeals court. A couple of the judges are making arguments about why I should take it further. It's definitely going to happen. Look what's happening to you. I mean, I've known you for a long time, and I sit there and I look at what they're saying about Tucker. I said, what is Tucker saying so bad? He's kind of laying out these arguments that ought to be debated right now in the halls.
I feel pretty moderate.
Tom Cotton's coming out and saying all these influencers and podcasters aren't. Well, let's have a debate. When we had a debate about the Ukraine, about the funding of Ukraine in the Senate, we beat them. This is why Mitch McConnell had to resign. Because why? Because the podcasters and influencers are much closer to the MAGA base and can deliver the heat into the House and the Senate, and they know that. I'm all for having a War Powers Act debate right now.
Exactly.
Let's have the American people weigh in, because you're going to see the American people are 90% against forever wars. And even people that support Israel are saying exactly what we're doing here. We thought we had this thing in Gaza you had to clean up with the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas. Next thing you know, we're bombing Tehran, and you're taking incomings. What's happened in Tel Aviv over the last 24 hours is pretty shocking, because you're taking these ballistic missiles. What's Trump's been saying? Everybody calm down. Let's get back to the table. I can get actual thing. And he said, I can get it. We can take it apart. We can blow it up if we want to, but I can cut a deal. And Witkoff and Trump, if you got to talk about two deal makers that are not like diplomats, but guys actually going to get stuff done, I feel more confidence with Steve Witkoff and Donald Trump trying to work something out than continue on the shooting war, where, trust me, with a carrier battle group heading over there and all these tankers heading over to the Middle East, we are prepping right now to come in on the offensive side of combat sorties. And that's a game changer. As bad as it is now that we're a combatant, because we are a combatant, which I say, if they're unilateral, why did we get sucked in here? Where is that decision where you said, hey, Steve, decisions just get made. You never know how they get made.
They're organic. There's never a moment where we stop and we say, do we want to be involved in another Middle Eastern war? You just wind up there, just like everything in life. You're just like, how did I get here?
But I think that's why they're attacking you, because you're saying, hang over a second. Let's have a national discussion on this right now before we get in. And they don't want that.
But why the viciousness? Not toward me. I mean, I'm kind of punched out of society. But like, why is it this topic evokes a cruelty and a dishonesty that no other topic does?
It's never been questioned like this. There's never been questioned out in the open. Yeah. We've never had this debate that you've kind of led for the last couple of months, that now we're actually having this debate. They've never had people in government like Tulsi Gabbard, like Bridge Colby, like others. And look, I don't think Bridge is hard enough in the Chinese Communist Party. But his book was amazing, and he's got the pivot to Asia, which we have to get to. If people want to see how the institutions and apparatuses work, and this is why the Democrats are all institutionalists now, right? We're the anti-institutional guys, because we see how corrupt they are. You need not look further than CENTCOM. One of the problems we have is that Obama tried it. Obama put his whole presidency on the national security side. We're going to pivot out of Asia. We're going to pivot out of Middle East to Asia, the pivot to Asia. Put Joe Biden in charge. After 8 years, he had one combat brigade of Marines forward deployed to Brisbane, Australia, or Darwin, Australia. That was it. No other changes. No other changes.
So here's a company we're always excited to advertise because we actually use their products every day. It's Merriweather Farms. Remember when everybody knew their neighborhood butcher? You look back and you feel like, oh, there was something really important about that, knowing the person who cut your meat. And at some point, your grandparents knew the people who raised their meat so they could trust what they ate. But that time is long gone. It's been replaced by an era of grocery store mystery meat boxed by distant beef corporations. Ugh. None of which raised a single cow. Unlike your childhood, they don't know you. They're not interested in you. The whole thing is creepy. The only thing that matters to them is money, and God knows what you're eating. Merriweather Farms is the answer to that. They raise their cattle in the U.S., in Wyoming, Nebraska, and Colorado, and they prepare their meat themselves in their facilities in this country. No middlemen, no outsourcing, no foreign beef sneaking through a back door. Nobody wants foreign meat. Sorry, we have a great meat, the best meat here in the United States, and we buy ours at Merriweather Farms. Their cuts are pasture raised, hormone free, antibiotic free, and absolutely delicious. I gorged on one last night. You got to try this for real. Every day we eat it. Go to merriweatherfarms.com/Tucker. Use the code Tucker76 for 15% off your first order. That's merriweatherfarms.com/Tucker.
Hey, on our
I supported that. That was like the, I despise Obama. I think he wrecked the country. But I don't think that's a that was not a crazy idea to pivot.
We're having this debate. I had Flynn on today after you. We're having the same debate today. Remember, the carrier battle group that's over protecting Taiwan in the South China Sea is now en route to the Malacca Straits. The Nimitz battle group is going to the North Arabian Sea.
So you're a former naval officer. Give us a sense of the decision making process that leads to a move.
Well, here's what, on November 5th of 79, I'm a destroyer officer, a navigator on a destroyer in a carrier battle group. We're doing the changeover from San Diego from, we're home port. The 3rd Fleet to the 7th Fleet all takes place in Hawaii, the Hawaiian operator. You do like 3 or 4 days of workup because they have a certain different lingo and a different tempo. So you got to get to how they do it. We get called in the middle of the night in the red phone. Everybody line up single file and head into Pearl Harbor. Well, Pearl Harbor as a sea detail is almost impossible to do because it's so narrow, right? And Honolulu's up there. So it's not like World War II. It's very dangerous. We go in there and we hear the hostages have been taken. And now all of our assets in Korea, in the South China Sea, and in Japan are heading towards the North Arabian Sea, which the United States Navy had never been at.
With the backdrop of military strategy and unexpected challenges in the Arabian Sea, the conversation shifts to the intricate web of power dynamics in today's industries, revealing how regulatory capture shapes our economic landscape.
Like we have now in President Trump's administration, like Gail Slater and what's happening to the FTC under Andrew Ferguson, taking big tech to court and trying to break them up. Right now, you have Wall Street, you have big tech, you have big agriculture, you have big pharma, you have the big healthcare industry, you have the defense contractors, you have the concentration of these massive industries that have every lobbyist, communications expert, all the big law firms on their payroll. If you and I wanted to start today and say, hey, guess what? We want to take on one of the industries. Let's take on big ag. You literally can't get a great law firm to represent you or a great lobbyist because they're all hired by these guys. That concentration.
And they'll set up regulatory hurdles that are insurmountable.
This is the regulatory cap.
I'm living that in something that we're doing on the side. And you just find out that it's like crazy.
That concentration of power.
Oh my God.
Regulatory capture and really regulatory merger. It's, we said when we gave China everything after Tiananmen Square, when we gave most favored nation status and WTO and access, that the more they get prosperous by, because they were a backward agricultural country at the time, the more prosperous they get, the more they'll become like a liberal democracy like the United States.
I remember that.
We actually have copied the model of the Chinese Communist Party. They have a handful of state-owned industries, very powerful, merged in with the central government, an authoritarian government. That's what we have. And that's what President Trump, the promise of President Trump is to break that. The American people don't want it. They hate it. Now, they need the tools to do it. And that's why I think this next couple of hundred days coming after the 10th anniversary of really President Trump, because what happened? At the top of the escalator, Trump was in 7th place because people didn't know if he was serious about running or not.
No, right.
He had just gone to CPAC, I think, 90 days before. In the 2015 CPAC, Trump finished 7th in the poll at 3.5%.
I remember.
Behind all these guys. At the top of the escalator, he's in 7th. That night, they do a flash poll, I think, on CNN. He's first. Why? That talk was in a nomenclature and a vernacular that American people hadn't heard from a politician about the border, about deportations, about China, about bringing jobs back, about ending the forever wars. Remember, as the campaign went on, he goes to South Carolina.
I'll never forget it.
And in South Carolina, he literally blew up the entire, not just Bush apparatus, kind of Fox and kind of everybody on the right that had been in there. And when he said it, you could hear the audience gasp. And so many commentators came on and said, well, that's the end of him, because
they all said that, except me, because I was the only one at Fox News who I knew. I was like, yes, thank you for telling the truth, finally.
But everybody around you was that he's finished.
They hated me for agreeing with him. They hated me personally.
And he won in a landslide.
Karl Rove, who was my neighbor and always got along with him. Again, perfectly charming guy, sort of. Very, not a good person at all, but smart. And, you know, Karl, but after that, That was the moment I realized it was in that Greenville, South Carolina debate that all that mattered to them was a projection of force abroad. That's it. Everything else was just
because
silly.
They were so shocked he said it and united in the fact that he can't win.
That's when Bill Kristol turned against him, was that night. And if you look, you could look it up. Check his Twitter feed. The day before, Kristol was like, you know, Trump's kind of a pig, but he's our pig. And actually, we can kind of use him. And maybe we should make peace with Trump. Bill Kristol said that, who I used to work for many years. The day after that Greenville debate, he took the position that he has now, which is, you know, we'll destroy the country to prevent Trump from exercising power. Like, he was a sworn enemy of Donald Trump's after that, when he came out against the Iraq War. How weird. If you killed a child in a DUI, okay, you're drunk, you accidentally run over a child, there's no possibility you could meaningfully advance in American life, because people would say, we've forgiven you, Steve, but you did something that's so horrible.
Irresponsible.
Right. It's just horrible. Right. It was a mistake. Yeah, it was a mistake, but it was horrible. We allowed the architects of the Iraq War, who gravely injured the United States, got all these people killed, Americans killed, to continue to advance. They were never held to account for what they did, ever, at all.
Well, and
they became the head of the World Bank. Like, how did we do that?
The specter of that is what we've faced over the last 72 hours. This is exactly the same pitch as the Iraq War. Weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, I know.
You have to get it. So they understand one thing. They think the playbook works. This is why we have to stop it now. If we don't stop it now, it's going to work all the time. They think that playbook of lulling the American people to sleep and telling them there's these evil people that have to be taken down. And if they're taken down, everything's going to be fine after that. And that we face an apocalypse if that doesn't happen. They're running the Iraq War playbook over again with almost some of the same players, or at least the protégés. Right, in the verticals of who those players were.
But why does institutional conservatism allow it? If Mike Pompeo shows up at the, you know, Republican county of dinner in some state, like, he's treated as, I was in a restaurant with him recently. Everyone's like, oh, Mike Pompeo. He's treated as like a legitimate person. No one has ever, the right does not hold its own people accountable on the most basic level.
Well, we say the right. The Republican Party is controlled opposition, okay? They've never really put up a fight. Let's go back to the three central tenets of Trumpism, you know, immigration, border and sovereignty, trade and ending forever wars. The official apparatus of the Republican Party hates all three of those
and doesn't agree with any of them.
Do you think
still true?
It's 100%. Look what happened here in the last 24 hours on the immigration side. All of a sudden, they promulgated that because of big agriculture's needs, we can no longer have raids on farms, raids in hotels, all of it, that had to be countered by President Trump saying, hey, there's 20 million illegal aliens, I'm going to get them all out of here. And then today or this morning he came out with, we're going to triple down the raids in sanctuary cities, right? I'm going to get all these guys out of here. No, there's huge institutional fight led by Fox News, right? Their biggest is the forever wars. But if you look at the Wall Street Journal, and if you look at Fox News on the trade and bringing jobs back from China, they're very ambivalent about that. They're talking about the cost of living. I mean, they're putting up that, you know, because they're all free traders, which is the way the country got in the first place. They're also quite ambivalent on the immigration and mass deportation. Remember, mass deportation is just not the criminals. You have to get, President Trump said today, 20 million. I say it's 10 came in on Biden's watch. They all have to leave. But you're seeing a lot of ambivalence to that, particularly the Republican Party. They're saying, the Wall Street Journal says, well, no, they add 2%, 1.5 to 2% to GDP, right? Because they buy so much stuff. Number two, they've driven down wages among particularly low-skilled Black and Hispanics. I say, this is why we put the coalition together. This is why 39% of Black men are voting for us. This is why South Texas is now MAGA territory, because they understand their wages to be driven down. So I think the Republican Party hates the basic tenets of President Trump's platform, particularly the one they most hate is ending the forever wars. That's tied to both Wall Street. It's tied to the defense industry. It's also tied to this mentality that we have an American empire. Remember you and I saying, hey, we are actually a republic. We want to go back to being a republic. Like, yeah, the founders are our country.
With the backdrop of shifting political alliances and economic concerns, the narrative now pivots to a more personal story, revealing the unexpected consequences of local actions in California and their broader implications.
And she sells it to a CIA officer who pays the cash.
But
the next thing you know, there's a Ukraine flag flying from my flagpole. I'm not making this up. And my neighbor sent it to me. He's like, oh, look what happened to your house. A house I really loved. And I was like, wow, that's just a metaphor. But okay, so let me ask you, you've made a couple of allusions. I almost don't want to ask you because it's upsetting, but to the country coming apart.
Yeah.
To conflict here. Clearly, there's been a rise in violence. This weird Minnesota story, which I'm not even going to ask you about because I don't understand it at all. I don't think anybody does. But I want to ask you about what's happening in California. It does seem like resisting federal authority on immigration is an act of sedition more profound than anything they did at Fort Sumter in 1861. And this is not resolved. Like, what are we watching right now in California with Gavin Newsom?
You're from D.C. I'm from Richmond.
Yeah.
I'm raised in Richmond. And I keep telling people, I thought we settled this about federal law and states' rights and secession in the mid-1860s. We had a civil war to determine the outcome of this. We've had that discussion. We've had that argument. It's been settled. I said this to President Trump in the first term, that this whole thing of sanctuary cities and sanctuary states is absolutely a neo-Confederate, you know, mentality.
Yes.
That you can have. Gavin Newsom, right?
Have you said that on War Room?
Yes, I've said
it. Neo-Confederate?
He's so smart. It's a neo-Confederate.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
Jackson.
I'm stealing that, by the way.
No, because.
So good.
Jackson, look, he had this thing before the Civil War with Andrew Jackson and John C. Calhoun.
Yeah.
On tariffs, where they, remember, the landed aristocracy in South Carolina were some of the richest people. I think Charleston had more what would be equivalent to billionaires.
Yes.
At the start of the Civil War than any place on earth.
And it shows in the Battery down
there. It's a magnificent city
today. It is.
Today. John C. Calhoun, as his vice president, was going to stop and go down and defend South Carolina, said, we're not going to do these tariffs. And Jackson said, I'm going to call the army down there. And if Calhoun's defying me, I'm going to hang him from the first lamppost. I mean, Jackson was a guy who was going to take immediate action. What's happening in California is kind of the equivalent. You've had the sanctuary cities, and if President Trump had not sent the troops in and federalized the National Guard, what would happen in L.A. was what we see in all these cities. It would explode. It would have been the summer of love of 2025, where there was a lot more rhetoric than actually action. One of the reasons President Trump had Bill Barr and Esper and all these people that wouldn't execute what he wanted. Now he's got a team, and that's why I'm so glad he came out last night and says, I'm doubling and tripling down the rates. My recommendation on the show the day after this stuff happened over that weekend was President Trump ought to triple the ICE raids, and he ought to go to schools. Hey, they got to go, right? They have to go, and it's not pleasant. We got to be very humane about it. But you have to have a show of force. And if you need to send in the army, if you need to send in federalized National Guard, we have to do it. California is the railhead of this. That's why you have to break it there. It's going to obviously pop up in Chicago and New York. But you have to take, and Stephen Miller said this, and I've known Stephen a long time. You know, Andrew and Stephen Miller and Ben Shapiro, Alex Muller, yeah. They all came out of kind of West L.A., right? Ben may have been the Valley, but they're all West L.A. guys. Stephen Miller's been saying since the time I knew him, the war for America is going to be won or lost on the streets of Los Angeles. He said this for almost 20 years. And this is what this fight, and this is what's so disturbing about the timing. We're totally focused on that. And President Trump actually implementing the deportations of mass deportations. And all of a sudden this thing breaks out in Persia, in the Middle East. And now the whole country is just focused on that. It's almost like a time diversion to get our attention.
It does feel that way.
Because BB gave it up. There was no, it didn't have to happen on Thursday night. We were told, but it was leaks, oh, there's a bomb and they're going to have it. And, you know, this is something they have to have immediately. He comes on Brett Baer and says, well, it's 12 or 13 months. We've heard the 12 or 13 months for 20 years. Maybe it is 12 or 13 months, but that doesn't mean you have to act on Friday. Why is it Thursday and Friday when we're in the middle of actually the most important part of this Third World War? Is the 10 million invaders we've had in this country, or 20 million, according to President Trump, they all have to go. You understand that there's many bad actors that came in on this, right? That are now sleeper cells in this country. Everybody's got to go, and we have to do it. That is when I talk about Third World War, the central battlefront for the United States of America is internal to the United States of America. This is why we have to focus on this in the timing, because there's no coincidences of how all of a sudden we're asked to do bombing runs in Iran, a half a world away, and it sucks up all the media attention that you don't even, there's not even a discussion on this. And that's why President Trump coming out doubling down. And Homan and Stephen Miller, there ought to be three more raids tomorrow, and we got to get the focus back on that. So,
how should you deal with, I mean, when Orville Faubus, who was the governor of Arkansas in 1956, presides over the state that refuses to desegregate after the Supreme Court says you have to desegregate in Brown versus Board? And Dwight Eisenhower was not a liberal. says you can't ignore federal authority on a federal issue. This is a Supreme Court decision. And he sends the 101st Airborne to Little Rock to Central High School and says, sorry, you're going to desegregate. Now, whatever you think of that, it's kind of disgusting in certain ways, but it's also essential to preserving the union. I mean, I don't understand. Like, how can you have your biggest state being like, no, to the federal government? Like, what?
On a central issue.
On a central issue.
About our sovereignty.
Who lives here?
Yes.
Who takes federal benefits?
Right.
You know,
who's actually a citizen? Who has allegiance to this country?
Who gets to choose our leadership?
Right.
In a democratic system.
This is why this radical neo-Marxist Democratic Party will fight. This is the hill they will die on.
So, okay. But I don't understand how you can put up with that. How can you put up with that? That's like maybe a little more important than whether Iran gets the bomb.
Well, you can't. And by the way, the American people don't. I think it's like 60-40 where they agree with President Trump on these mass deportations. Remember, one of the reasons we're winning the African-American vote is President Trump does not believe, like the Democratic Party and Kamala Harris, in mass incarcerations. He believes in mass deportation. When I was in prison, the only thing I put up from Danbury was like on the 26th of August, I said, hey, victory's at hand. I can tell from the prisoners in Danbury, the young Hispanics and blacks who hate the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And they particularly hated Kamala Harris because I said, look, the Democratic Party is for mass incarcerations to break our families and to make us dependent upon the government. I mean, these guys were smarter than guys going to Yale in the political science department because it's a lived experience of them. And they support mass deportations because in a place like Danbury, 10% of the prison is bad hombres from these other countries that are the most dangerous criminals, convicts you have in these prisons. People at the street level have our back on this. This is this new coalition. But we have to succeed in this. We have to succeed in the deportations and getting wages to rise.
That's it for today's summary. To stay up to date with more summaries and news, follow us on X and Instagram and visit our website, podsummarizer.xyz. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, or complaints about the content displayed, please do not hesitate to write to us at info@podsummarizer.xyz. Thank you for listening.